Hello, this is Mary Cole and the Good Story Podcast, helping writers craft a good story. With me, you will hear from thought leaders related to writing, and sometimes not, about topics important to writers of all categories and ability levels. Here is to telling a good story. Thanks so much for joining us for the Good Story Podcast. This episode with Laura Elliott, I was so excited to bring to you. We did have some technical issues, which are all on me, by the way. I am just not an audio pro. But the interview was so interesting. Laura was such a wonderful interview subject, and I just thought that the audience would appreciate it. So for this episode, I hope that you can sort of put your forgiveness hats on a little bit and overcome some less than ideal audio quality for the content that it provides. So with your patience and wonderful listening ears and valuable attention, let's roll with today's interview for the Good Story Podcast. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Mary Cole and the Good Story Podcast. This is episode 4 with Laura Elliott. Laura comes to us from a very mysterious area of the writing craft, which is ghostwriting. And I know a lot of writers are very curious about it, want to know more about it, but it tends to be kind of an interesting, veiled part of the market. So I wanted to bring a real live ghost onto the podcast to talk about this and other interesting things that she has going on. So welcome, Laura.
Thank you so much, Mary. It's so great to be here. I just absolutely am looking forward to our talks together. And yes, I am a ghost. I'm a real life ghost. It's kind of fun to say at parties. And I got into the field through, it was the unexpected career, right? The uncharted living that I love to talk about. I had been a writer in several areas, and I particularly for ghostwriting got into writing a book for someone because I wrote a speech for them. And I write for global thought leaders. And what that means is I really write for people that are starting movements, even more than books. You know, obviously the book is an important component of their platform, but they're also doing big things in the world in terms of trying to start certain big movements around the book, whether that's a documentary, whether that's a leadership program for girls, whether that's encouraging minority women to be more of the blockchain cryptocurrency world and the Silicon Valley area. I live outside the Silicon Valley, so I do write for a lot of entrepreneurs and their programs. And it's very inspiring for me because these great leaders are starting important movements because they're solving some kind of problem that they faced in their personal lives. And so it's just been such a blessing to be able to help people give a voice to their programs through books. And like I said, I got through it writing a speech. So because I wrote a speech for a particular individual, this was a female minority individual, she also wanted me to come on board and write her book. So there's lots of ways into ghostwriting that you might not even know about. I think if you do follow your passion with your writing and keep your ears open a little bit, you'll be able to definitely get into the market.
So let's start there. You were a writer of your own work and you have some of your own work available. So tell me how you the early writer got into your own craft and how you wrote some of your own work before you got into writing for others.
That's great, great story, and it's got a couple of avenues there. The short story is that I was in multimedia. Well, I guess a long story, not too long though. I was in multimedia in Los Angeles, and then what that means is I was an animator, and I worked at E! Entertainment Television at Los Angeles Times. I got my start actually in a startup, a financial startup called Digital Insight. So I have a huge background in business and startups, which is why I write for entrepreneurs. I actually have a degree in accounting, which I don't tell most people.
Wow!
When I found that out, that Scrooge was an accountant, it's like, oh my God, I did not want to be an accountant, but I did actually do that, and it's funny, you know, it's really helped. I'm so not, I was like the world's worst accounting student, but, you know, life took me where I needed to be, which was this multimedia design career that I got through. I actually studied at Art Center in Pasadena, and so anyway, my whole life really was around writing. I was always writing kind of in the background, journaling. And what I would do is when I had a big problem in my life, I started to journal to try and figure it out. And I remember specifically journaling because my kids were needing to, we were supposed to decide what to do with their elementary school education. And it was really complicated because they had shown my kids a PG-13 movie at school, and they were eight. You know, it was like one of those vacation days, and it was not something I, as a parent, thought was very responsible. So I didn't really know what to do with that. You know, it was a big enough thing. It crossed my line. And so, excuse me, personally, I do enjoy doing that. I also celebrate things. So what I did was I found Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way.
Love The Artist's Way. I encourage writers to read that book just to better their lives, not even their creative lives, but it's such an empowering book to just have in your pocket. So I'm so glad that you bring that up.
Well, you know, it's so funny because I wasn't seeking it out. And I was doing a lot of volunteer work for my daughter's kindergarten class. And I was also an artist. And so we were doing these, you know, I painted murals with the kids with their hands for Lion King at the time was a big movie. You know, I was just always in there doing art with the children. And Mrs. O, who was the kindergarten teacher, a wonderful, amazing, talented woman, wanted to encourage me in my writing. And so as a gift for being a parent in the classroom and helping kids, she gave me The Artist's Way. And it opened up just this whole world to me of creativity, like you say, you know? I mean, they mention in there The Artist's Way, so you think you've got to be an artist, you know? Well, I certainly right. did not think of myself as that. I was, you know, in between, I was actually trying to reboot my career because I had been in a serious car accident where I broke my neck.
Ooh.
And I was an industrial designer. And so I had this time where I had to be very immobile. And I found graphic design, went back to Art Center, retrained in graphics, animation. And so this book kind of helped me find that track. You know, like, you know, I had all my connections in one field. Now it was another. And that's how I got to cover entertainment in Los Angeles. And also, I was also writing always behind the scenes. And I was hired as a graphic designer, multimedia designer, because I could write. Mm. And I remember specifically at the Los Angeles Times, I was always writing op-ed pieces. I was writing little journalistic pieces for local newspapers, that type of thing. And that really helped get that job because you had to write on the fly. I wasn't working graveyard shift, but I was working night shift. And I was working both wars that we were covering in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And so things would come in over the feed, and I would have to do these animated, like, flash presentations, working with journalists, videographers, photojournalists, you know, Pulitzer Prize-winning you know, staff, copywriters, editors, and we'd all package these big things. But some things would come in the middle of the night and you'd have to figure out the odd lead or what we would do with this. So it was that I was hired for that job because I did have writing as in my pocket. And as luck would have it, I was sitting right next to the cubicle of Andrew Nystrom, who was the travel editor at the time of the Los Angeles Times. And he had heard that I had traveled to Romania because I was invited because of my fiction work with young adults. They had heard about me in typical Romanian fashion. They invited artists, writers, ethnographers to Romania to speak about them to the world because they wanted to enter the EU. Now, this was around 2005.
Wow.
And so, in that time frame. So I was invited to go for 2 weeks, and it was a big thing because I was married and I had my family, and I was off, you know, on this big adventure in Romania for 2 weeks. You know, it was a big thing for me personally to do as well. And so anyway, Andrew heard about that trip. He's like, Laura, do you have an article about, you know, could you write a piece on Bram Castle Dracula? You know, God, we'd like a travel piece. And that was my first published travel piece, and I've been writing travel ever since. Travel has always been a big part of my life, and it really does inform the writing. I kind of like to say that I bring the world to my projects when I work with people, also to my speaking engagements, to so a real perspective. I actually traveled the world twice in a period of two years, doing all kinds of things. I originally went out into the world to do research for a screenplay in Indonesia.
Wow.
And that's actually how I got started, really, by being a good ghostwriter. Now, if I had a point, a place, and time that I never knew was the beginning of my journey, it would be that, because my dad was a prisoner of war in Japan. And I always knew it, but he never talked about it. And my dad was born in Indonesia. And he was a Dutch colonial, and he was taken prisoner as a child, you know, as a youth, as, you know, Japan occupied Indonesia. And he finally wanted to talk about his experience after he turned 80. And so, you know, this was back in the day without kind of cell phones. So we're like writing letters back and forth. And I interviewed him. And it was the best interview of my life because it took place over literally a dozen years.
Yeah.
And I learned the art of the interview with my own dad. And it was just a real special time. And I didn't realize how important those interviewing skills with my own dad would be in trying to get his personal story down and do a lot of research around that. You know, in my own career. Now, I would use it also to interview celebrities at junkets for movies, and, you know, COOs and now, you know, global thought leaders, that those same skills. Not so, because, you know, I think a lot of people sometimes think, oh, you need some sort of special connections to do these things. Really, no, you can just start wherever you are. I mean, I was an art teacher in kindergarten, and I learned about, you know, taking my career to the next level. You just never know, you know, what will life will present itself for you to use in your skills. And so, you know, you can just be really good at talking to your friends and really good at helping them out with problems. And you can leverage that and help other people, you know, and that's my blessing, is being able to interview someone. And really my job is to take the people who are really busy. Okay, people are very busy. We are all very busy.
Yes.
Everyone is. But particularly if you're heading up a huge organization, the last thing you have time for on your calendar is to write a book. I mean, you'd almost want to stab your eyes with needles, right? It's just like, I can't even imagine how I'm going to do this, right? So I have like sort of put the fun in the nonfiction process and made it really easy so people can get their message out in a relatively short period of time, you know, within 10 to 12 interviews, which is about 10 to 12 hours of time, I can work with them and their research to get a book out that's something that they can use to get their message to the world. So my job as a ghost, is to disappear from my own point of view and to interview someone and read their writings, whatever they've given me, and understand theirs and write in their voice and their perspective for their message. And it's a real blessing of listening, really important to listen, and really important to just really kind of get the research right to get their message down the way they want. And it's just really all these interviews are what I say they are is coffee talk. We just have coffee talk. Like, I don't know. It's kind of like, did you watch Saturday Night Live when they did, you know, coffee talk?
Yeah.
Episode, right. Okay, it's sort of like that, right? And they're like, sweat it with us, you know? It's really funny with the coffee talks. This is like, it kind of takes the pressure off. And really, that's where the gold is. You know, you're sitting around, you're talking, and something comes up. I mean, you might think the book is about one thing, and it legitimately is, of course. But in these little talks, it's like, you come up with these things that, wait a minute, I remember this thing. And you dig a little bit deeper there, because I think just like writers, like you and I write, we're writers. We can sometimes not see it because we're too close to the work.
Yeah.
And it's like your own story. The people that I write for, they can't see their own story. Some of them are writers and have tried to write it. They can't see the larger themes because they're too close to the work. So that's some of my job also, is to give a little bit of insight. I'm like, you know, have you ever thought about this? Because from what I've been hearing, you know, let's connect the dots here.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a cool way to get a bigger message than you even thought possible by getting some input.
So I would like to sort of take a different angle of attack to your skill set, to the research skill set, to the interview skill set. So you may be aware that publishing is having a bit of a conversation right now about own voices, all voices, and the issue of diversity. And are we allowed, quote unquote, to write from perspectives that are not ours? So obviously, two sides to this. I think it's amazing and well-deserved that diverse voices are now sought after, and publishing is finally interested in representing some people with different cultures, different languages, different origins, you know, different abilities and disabilities, that sort of thing, on the one hand. On the other hand, a lot of writers who may be white, may be women, may be of a certain demographic that's represented a lot on shelves, they're now saying, well, am I allowed, am I able to write an African-American character? Am I able to write a male character? Am I able to, you know? And so this conversation, I think the bigger implication of it is this idea that writing is a way of stepping outside of our own experience, because that's what we do whenever we write a character. And reading is a way of stepping outside of our own experience. And so a lot of writers now have realized, okay, everybody is looking very closely at what we're doing and making sure that we're representing all the diversity that life has to offer. And so if I want to step outside of my own experience and I want to write a character who's a different sexuality, for example, or a different culture, I need to do that intentionally. And I think research is a huge part of that. So I tell my clients, for example, you absolutely can write outside of your experience, but you need to do it justice. And so what is your research plan? What is your plan to maybe interview people of a different culture, a different sexuality, to make sure that you're really honoring that experience if you choose to write about it? So how do we, even whether we're ghostwriting or just character writing, how do we get to the marrow of somebody's experience with research and interviewing?
Well, that's a great, great, great question. And it has a couple of facets. I will say before I address anything specifically that we are writing from experience. We are all people. We are human beings. So humanity has a huge tie. We all have a level of experience that we can bring to our projects, and it really is just about understanding and empathizing with other people. I really believe the more you're able to empathize with a walk of anyone, you're going to be able to effectively report on it or write it. Now we have the fiction area, we have the nonfiction area. I'll tell you what I do. With nonfiction, it's all about primary research, right? So there's different kinds of research. There's primary research, which is interviewing a person who has had that experience. That is very important research. So if you're doing a war story, something like that, I think Spielberg, you know, he interviewed all of the Holocaust survivors, as many as possible, all the video, right?
Yeah.
So, and then Donna Jo Napoli also gave me a very big tip on this, because I still have not written my dad's story. I've written it as a novel 5 times. I've written it as a screenplay. I've come back to the fact that I'm going to write it as a novel again. You know, I'm too close to that story, so yes. We needed the time, right? But and the format. But I really got, I mean, it's a World War II story. It's a big story. It's a Pacific theater. It involved also the European theater and a lot of different things. It involved science and technology I didn't know. And Donna Jo Napoli said to me, I said, well, I think I'm falling in love with research, and I could probably research this book for the rest of my life, and I will just never write it. And she looked at me, and I don't know, she's just an amazing woman. And I heard her speak at SCBWI events over the years, especially over here in LA, you know, the annual events. And she would say, well, Laura, you got to give yourself, you could do that. And you've got to give yourself a time frame. You know, give yourself this time frame. I'm going to research this book for a specific amount of time, and I'm going to make the most dramatic decisions I can if it's fiction, you know, because you'll find research sometimes will lead you to different conclusions. But integrity comes in what you're writing, okay? If you're writing nonfiction, pure nonfiction based on facts, you have to go with the facts.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're doing creative nonfiction, that's a different thing. You can say this is not the truth, but it's how I envision the truth. I think it was in Cold Blood that took by Truman Capote narrative nonfiction to a new level. That was the first thing that really came on the scene that changed everything. It even changed the way newspaper reporting was done. I mean, now newspapers have to compete with entertainment. But back in the day, when Truman Capote wrote in Cold Blood, usually journalism was not narrative like he did. It was like Joe Friday, right? So
yep.
On the fifth block of the third day, you know, the month of May, X was shot, blah, blah, blah. That was what reporting was. So everything's evolved. So this is such a rich topic. We could probably talk on it for 2 or 3 hours, but I'll just say, or maybe 5. But I'll just point out 2 things I've done specifically. One in my fiction. I wrote a book called Winnemucca. It's a fairy tale, a magical fairy tale, magical realism about a girl waking up to her own intuition on a road trip that she takes. She's 17 years old. She's in the West.
Okay.
And she needs to have a certain voice, and it's not quite Southern, but it's not quite Southern, not quite Western. I didn't really know how to get her voice. I knew she was not me. I grew up in Chicago.
Okay.
And you can still hear it. the way I would say something is not the way my main character would. So I read Cash. Johnny Cash's autobiography. It is beautiful. The first line of that book says the way his line came down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the way his, you know, my line came down from, and he talked about all the different ancestors from Europe. And he had a way to turn a phrase. So no, was Ginny Johnny Cash? No, but she was a hybrid of many people, you know, that I went in and got the voice. So, I always think it's really great to turn to someone real when you're trying to get a voice down, even in fiction, you know. And then, you know, I would never get the voice for transfer student. This was a you know, it's an intergalactic tale of Beauty and the Geek, where a woman, a girl, okay, a Beverly Hills surfer, swaps lives with a boy geek alien, okay? I'm never going to be able to interview a boy geek alien, and they swap bodies. Like, it's a Freaky Friday type thing.
Yeah.
So how, you know, a boy becoming a girl in a girl's body, a girl becoming a boy and a boy, you know, I mean, there's just all these things that I will never know, but I researched around it. So that's the best way that I can talk about that. But primary resources, always, 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 always. If you are writing a book in the genre and you yourself are not that person or your character, try getting to know that. This world is, let's try and get to know someone and interview them. This world is so great with technology. You can reach out to all kinds of experts in fields. You can also reach out to many people in your community and just be like, yeah, I want to do a little research and try and get this story together. And I think this character is similar to maybe your experience. You know, can I talk to you a little bit, a little interview, and it will be more authentic. And then again, get someone in the field to read it. That's like beta reading. That's kind of like focus, you know, what they call focus books in marketing or something like that, or giving free theater tickets. The movies yeah. do that too. So, you know, when you've written what you think is your best guess or your heartfelt idea of what this experience you envision would be, this is especially in fiction. Nonfiction, it's different because that's really real. So, you know, you will be, you know, my books are with a real person. I'm really talking about their experience. They are in the director's chair. They are calling the shot. So I'm just the conduit. So, but in this world of fiction that you're talking about, that is the most important thing to do, I think, is really get people that can give you a really good idea of whether this is accurate in some ways. Now, to saying that, you know, you're going to miss things sometimes, right? You're going to do your best job. You're going to do all of the things that I've said. And maybe there's something that you might have missed. You know, that's always possible. But we have to do the best we can in the time we have to do it. And you really can't get caught up in perfectionism, or else you will not write word one. I think it was Neil Gaiman who said the only perfect thing is a blank page, right? Because the yep. minute you write a word, right, it could be a different word, you know? Like, I don't know if I want to start my story with this. Maybe I'll start it with that. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. So, you know, from that perspective. So, yes, that's what I would have to say about this
and to your,
big, rich topic.
To your point, you could research forever.
Yes, I mean, seriously, and I had, and that's why I went to Donna. I was like, she just got done talking, and I love her. I think she was talking about her book, Bound.
Yeah.
She always writes historical pieces and books, and, you know, she had just said, she has four kids at the time, and they were a bit little, and she said something about her kitchen floor being spotless, something about her kitchen floor, like how she never worries about her kitchen floor. It's spotless. And she said, yeah, the kids can eat off of it. Like she didn't care. Like she didn't care about her house being a little bit messy by other people's standards. She had her kids bake, you know, make meals every yeah. day. You know, even her 2-year-old, it would be like yogurt and fruit. But, you know, she found the time she needed to do the work she needed and the way she needed to do it. And we're all different and our processes are all different. But the one thing that we need to do is do the work. You know, we need, as writer, you need to do the work as conscientious as possible, but don't let perfectionism or the fact that you're not gonna maybe understand something stop you. You can always understand it. You can always pick up the phone. You can always research things. But there's rich history. Like, how was I ever going to write about Indonesia and Japanese occupied a time of 1942 and World War II, I can't take a time machine and go back there. I can't.
Yeah.
But what I can do is look up all the primary research. There's a lot of books that have been written. There's a lot of, I went to Indonesia and I talked to people. That's always possible for people. You know, and I know that, you know, you can get into, these kinds of organizations that will give you some money to do that for a certain project, you know, so you can get these awards that will send you to different places as well. You can look around for that on the internet. They will help you. People will help you if you're even looking for certain parts of history. So that's always, because I know we can't always travel where we need to go, right?
Yeah.
But that is available too. There's so much help. Once you have an idea, so much of the universe comes to help you. It just is absolutely amazing to me how it happens. And I can't explain it. There's been so many things that you would call a coincidence, which I really don't believe in. It just serendipity takes in. And once you start, you will see that things will fill in for you and you will start to meet the right people. The people you need will come to you, and the people that need you, you'll go to. It's just interesting. But I do believe that also with what I write, you know, because this is very pointed and interesting to me, because I do write a lot. Well, I'm a female, so that's it. I'm a female. So I do write about female entrepreneurs quite a bit. I write with men as well. But I'm kind of drawn to the female, a minority entrepreneur experience. While I'm not a minority female, I can certainly empathize, and when I interview my subjects, understand their world. And so in the nonfiction world, maybe it's not quite as difficult. I think my biggest challenge was when I wrote from a Muslim man's perspective about his experience in America. Mm. I took that project on, and we clicked together, and it worked out just fine. But that was probably, for me, the biggest stretch.
Okay.
You know, and for me, I think that the thing that really that I learned in that process was we're both human beings and we can both relate, and I can understand what he had gone through, what he tells me about it, you know, and get it on the page. So he would tell me, you know, how things maybe I wrote not quite right or right in the voice exactly, but you know, that was things that we worked out. So I would say don't limit yourself. I really wouldn't. You can get the expertise you need because they're out there and ready to help you.
So in that vein, can a lot of writers, there's a natural insecurity to the creative process. So a lot of writers, you know, as the publishing landscape right now is asking, are you allowed to write this story? Writers are asking that themselves, even before they put pen to paper. Am I allowed to tell this story? Is the story good enough? Am I good enough? And I think one of the things, you know, it's very important and valuable, I think, of you to say, hey, get out there. People are willing to help. But if I'm a writer and I'm feeling I don't even know where to take the first step, how have you maybe had success in finding people in the world to interview, especially if it's like a sensitive topic, like, for example, something that might be emotionally painful, like adoption or illness, death, grief, these things that you really want to make sure you get right on the page, but that people may not just want to sit down and talk about necessarily. How do you go out into the world and get that interview?
Yeah. Well, one of the things you have to do is be open. Be open to people that you meet and experiences that you have, and go out there and do it. It's never really, I don't believe many things happen when you're not reaching out. So one of the things about confidence about writing is to get out and be in a group of writers who can connect you to organizations. Mm. The SCBWI obviously is a huge, 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 wonderful organization that has many, many facets and many experts that can help you along. Mentors, very, very important. Ask your mentor, find who you want to be and ask them how they did it, what connections they've used. The other thing that you can do very often is, your local university is going to have all kinds of information. You don't have to get it from a person right away. This is the other thing. You know, it's not just the interview. Interviews are tricky, actually, sometimes. Like, for instance, my dad, he didn't want to go certain places because of the trauma.
Yeah.
And so you learn how, when you, I am an expert dealing with people who have experienced trauma. A lot of the books that I write have had some sort of, people that I write for have had traumatic experiences happen. And you learn how to understand what some of the triggers are and how to respond to them. For instance, in my dad's case, when the interview got too difficult for him personally, he defaulted in answering the question to the general history of the time, which he really was quite a student of. And I never really understood fully as a child, because he would talk about history a lot. And when you're a child around the dinner table, you're kind of like, oh, really, Dad, tell me that history.
Right.
But then very, very interestingly, only in the last seasons of his life would I fully understand what would be more important to someone who was locked away for 4 years than the history at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that says a lot about character and how to write it. So those vulnerabilities, the things that maybe if you do have the great good fortune to interview someone who has gone through a trauma experience, or even yourself, because I do believe that a lot of the books that we write really is mined from our own stuff. So if you're writing about these topics, maybe it's happened to you. And that's where Julia really, Cameron, really unleashes the gold there in the morning pages. I mean, it was so much comes from just our own journaling and our own focusing on what our past experience is. So if you really are shy about that, about going out and talking to people and the interviews aren't coming your way, then really take a look at yourself and write about what you know. I mean, that is one of the first experiences. You know, if you really are a little bit wondering and really getting started, starting with what you know is always really a great rich mine of gold there, of stories and memories and things like that. And you plug into it only, and what I call it is appointments with your imagination.
Oh, that's good.
With my imagination, yes, and my clients. So we have, you know, when I ghostwrite, we have a weekly call, it's an hour call, and that is for my client to make an appointment with their imagination, as busy as they are professionally, as we all are. And that's where they bring me. They say, Laura, you'll never guess this week this happened, can you believe it? Like, one of the clients I was writing for had this special quote that meant so much to her growing up, from a Black woman, and she's a Black woman writing this book, and she was in this part of Atlanta, and she saw the quote from the very woman that inspired her on a brick wall. You know, and we just wrote about it in the book. So there's all these things that start happening when our imaginations start really, really working, and you'll notice it in the process of your own creativity and your own creation as well. Dots will be connected. You don't know them now, but taking the step, the dots will connect.
And we're allowed to say this because I'm calling you in California. I'm originally from California, so we're allowed to talk about serendipity with a straight face.
Right. Exactly. Totally. And I just think that's the one thing you have to be open to, too, is that new direction. You know, for instance, this is very powerful. I was really hesitant about writing the end of my dad's story. He gave me an ending. It seemed plausible, but it didn't seem right. So I sat on it for a long time, but there was nothing I could do about it. I'm like, well, okay, that's what Dad said. But if you are actually doing some sort of primary research, especially somebody who's close to you and your family, you have to be dispassionate about it. So everything that he mentioned to me needed to have research behind it to say that it existed. So for me, I had to look through war records and the way prisoners were transferred and found when groups of prisoners were transferred and this type of thing. So, you know, I had to make sure that what he was telling me was actually real, you know.
Sure.
And that was hard because, you know, he doesn't know, he's traumatized, he doesn't know all the dates. But the ending never made sense to me. Well, I sat down, I was in Bali, and I sat down at a luncheon about forgiveness by Mofo Tutu. And it was one of, it was very powerful. And I sat next to another woman whose uncle had also been taken prisoner at the same time my father had. And she had done a lot of work on her book because her, her, the one that she was talking about, her uncle, was, a painter, a very well-known painter in Bali. And she did a lot of research. Well, she's Dutch. She speaks Dutch. Well, the Dutch government kept a lot of records that I wasn't able to even translate, right? I don't speak Dutch. I don't. And so she was doing the same research, the same period of time, and knew exactly the information.
Oh my goodness.
The information I was looking for, she had found. And so that led me to the ending of the book. And I gave my dad the ending of the book for his last birthday, his 92nd birthday. And that was just kind of amazing. Yeah, it was an amazing gift. And I mean, I don't know what else to say about that.
Yeah. I mean, what can you say?
Right? You can't call it serendipity or coincidence. It's because I think somehow the energy that I had, I wasn't even there at that time to do research. That project had stopped. I was there for the Indonesian, the book festival that they have there, the Ubud Book Festival. It's an amazing one if you could ever get there. And I was just there to absorb everything from there, the wonderful points of view, international perspective there at the books festival. And listening to Mofo Tutu on forgiveness was just phenomenal. Of course, that's why I was there. I wasn't expecting putting dots together on my own personal project. But that's what happened. So when you begin something, things start happening to help you to get to the end if you stay open to them.
And I feel like a lot of writers do experience this, whether or not they want to go in the Julia Cameron direction, the serendipity direction. But a lot of writers, when they jump from the creative part of a process to the revision part of a process, things tend to start coming together and they'll start noticing maybe connections that they'd left for themselves, like little breadcrumbs, but maybe unconsciously. And I think that during the revision process, this kind of writing magic, even to unbelievers, it becomes a little obvious that, oh, you know, things are working on multiple levels to help a project along, because you really start noticing that you've woven an image lexicon or a theme into the project that you didn't intend, and just like nice things come to the surface. But
it's imagination.
Yeah.
And our imagination is, you know, it speaks to us in different ways and we can see it, you know, like you said, it leaves breadcrumbs. I love that. Our imagination leaves breadcrumbs for us. And we're conjuring it out of our mind, our own understanding, our own thoughts, our own creativity, and there's a magic about it. I mean, that's what I write about with Laura's Magic Day. There is a magic about it. You know, there's a magic about the process. It's real. It really is. Just like a ghost.
Just like a friendly ghost. I think I have, as we kind of get toward the end of our conversation, I think I have two questions. One is logistical, very much for those still kind of curious about the inner workings of the ghostwriter. Would you mind talking through a project from inception to completion? Because as a ghostwriter, it's not just you on the writing project, it is your subject, and it is sort of they are the impetus for the project. So how do you just manage from beginning to end a ghostwriting project?
Okay, that's a really great question. And they're all just a little bit, they have the same kind of trajectory. But the most important thing that any ghostwriter can do is to honor your subject's process. Because, you know, you're a writer and you have your own process, but all of a sudden now you're collaborating with someone who has their own process, and it's their process first. You're there to serve. I'm in a servant role.
Mm-hmm.
So, I very much want to know, how do they like to go about this? Some people are very visual. I've had lots of videos to go through. I've had lots of pictures. Some people are writers themselves, and it's more of an editing project plus. For sometimes it is a straight editing project, but most of the time I'm writing new content.
Yeah.
And then the other way is I have people who need to talk it out.
Yeah.
So they'll leave me sound files or videos, and I use the sound from there. So it's all about getting comfortable with process, their process. They're the star of the show. You are not. So it's all about that. And then really it's very much important to set up a calendar, an editorial calendar. I learned this at the LA Times, any newspaper. I write for World Travel Magazine, LA Parent, E! Entertainment. We all had editorial calendars. And this is even a good idea for an aspiring writer. And I found it even in my own case when I was trying to write my own projects and I had a very busy full life. I made my own editorial calendar and I held myself accountable to my deadlines, right? A deadline is important. It really is, or the work doesn't get done. And also deliverables are important. So what you promise your client is, I'm going to deliver this to you on whatever schedule you need over however months you've agreed to, or years even. And you're all on, because I really believe in, I'm going to credit Tony Luna, who's an amazing adjunct professor at Art Center for this, is all communication, whether it's business or personal, has three components. That you are communicating with respect on a foundation of trust.
Mm.
So, you know, trust is gained by doing what you say, by signing NDAs very frequently, of course. And you set this up through open communication with respect. That means I'm going to tell you what I'm going to give you, and you have this. So it's a respectful thing to do.
Yeah.
You're honoring somebody else's time. When any one of those components aren't there, whatever the relationship is will suffer. So you want to still stay really true to the project and offer it up in a time that respects their time and their process. So those are the keys, really.
And then do you pass it over for feedback as you're working, or do you sort of go away, create the manuscript, then present it for review?
My own personal process is like this, and actually it's counterintuitive for like most fiction, the world of fiction, since I work in nonfiction ghostwriting, but I also have ghostwritten fiction as well, and I really love it, and I also work this way in that world, is I deliver, for lack of a better word, a final draft at the end of the project. I edit along the way. So I submitted chapter 1 week, they review it, we go over revisions the next week, and there's a new chapter 2.
Okay.
So, and I do that because there's time constraints, whether it's from a publishing house or personal time constraints where a project can only take a certain amount of time, and you give the most polished version. But there's other ways around that too, and other ways to work, but to just do a first draft and let it languish out there and to sit and then expect a client to read a full book, of course they do at the end, but that's kind of a lot to ask.
Yeah.
Very busy people. So if you can keep it focused along the way, that's the best way to do it.
Oh, that's really interesting. And so to your point about editorial calendars, you are the one kind of driving this. You're like, okay, here are your next pages. You really have to kind of be on top of that element.
Yeah, and the client is too. I really, by the time someone's hired me, it's something they're ready to do. I mean,
yeah.
You know, they've invested a lot of money. They have they have some sort of obligation, whatever that it looks like. It's all different. Whatever their deadline, whatever it is, it's usually firm, and the project needs to be completed. So I really have had no problem with keeping someone involved. The time when things happen, which real life happens, it's hard. Okay, so you know, you're with a subject and you are in their life and understanding what's going on. Well, all kinds of things have happened to my clients while I've been working with them. Unspeakable tragedy, from you know upsets in life to things like this. So real life happens, and that's why you've got a calendar. That's really great, because there's a point in time where you can say, okay, we're going to pause.
Yeah.
We're going to hit pause here, and we're going to regroup later. And that's really great, because if you don't have something out there to look at to inform a deadline, excuse me, then as a writer, you have no way to explain why it's been delayed.
Sure.
You know, so if you have it all out there and everybody's signed on board and something happens, where either, well, God forbid you, but it's usually, you know, you're writing for the client, something happens in their life, then you can, you know, whoever needed it by a certain date can understand why it's not, you know what I mean? So little things come up, we you know, life happens. So this is a really great tool, and I would recommend anybody use it for anything that they're writing, whether it's a personal project or, you know, something on behalf of somebody else. It's a pretty powerful little tool.
Yeah, that's really good advice. So I wanted to end on, I think one of the main craft elements that may be interesting to get a ghost's perspective on is voice. Writers are constantly looking to find their voice, to fine-tune their voice, to discover this crazy topic of voice, which really gives a piece of writing its heart, right? And, you know, the publishing establishment is not very helpful, because all the agents are like, well, I'll know it when I hear it, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But you, as a writer, you have your own writing, obviously, but you have taken on the additional level of complexity of stepping into other people's voices and finding their voice with you as conduit. So do you have any ideas for how writers of any stripe, whether they're ghosting or working on their own projects, how they might approach and keep refining this idea of voice?
Well, I think the most important voice you need to get in touch with is your own. That first is the first thing. Then the second thing is be a student of voice. Because I also write screenplays. So I'm a ghostwriter of speeches, screenplays, and books. I lived in LA for a long time. I've been in movies. I've been in TV shows as well. Not the top level people in the background, right?
Sure.
And I have a very interesting story. Like, if you're in Los Angeles, movies will find you. I was working in the newsroom and Robert Redford walked in and wanted to use it in his movie Lions for Lambs. And so I was in that movie. You know, I was working that day, but it was mostly extras. And Meryl Streep took her mark at my desk every day. And that happened. And I'll never forget, while I was looking at the computer, I all of a sudden was crushing my hair. And I was like, oh my God. She's like, oh, you're real. I'm like, yeah, because I had a deadline. Most of the reporters or people were out of the newsroom at the time. But movie is all about show. Okay, so a screenplay is all about show. So it's, you know, you always hear a show, don't tell.
Yep.
And in the show, you will, you know, when you look at, you know, movies are another way to really see, to understand voice. But yeah, be a student of voice. It's in so many things. It's not just in the written word. There's a voice in painting, and there's a voice in music. So, you know, understand. I just heard, you know, I went out for pastry because I love, like, croissants and stuff.
What is not to love, though, seriously?
I know, right? there was this piano, and it was just sitting in the corner, and I thought, God, wouldn't it be great if somebody played that piano right now? Because I love the piano. I try and play it. I don't play it very well. But I love it when other people do. In walks this guy, young man. And he starts playing ragtime, because that's what they do. Apparently, Saturdays, that's what they do here. And he starts playing ragtime, Scott Joplin. I love Scott Joplin. I play it awfully. But we got into talking about Scott Joplin and stuff, and he's like, he loves the era and the point of view of the 20s. And this brief period, ragtime wasn't big for a long time, but the period of time captivates his imagination. And they have a way of saying things. You know, it's the Great Gatsby, right? There's a certain, like, vocabulary.
Yeah.
So you become attuned to that. It's not just a point of view. It's also a turn of a phrase. It's also, certain pauses, certain thoughts. And so I would first of all really get tuned to your own voice. How do you feel about things? What matters to you? What would you give your life for? And what would you not? You know, what disappointment could you not overcome? Things like this really need to be explored when you're looking at voice. For me, in the ghostwriting world, pointed questions sometimes come up, you know, about a certain experience or a certain way of going through something, you know. And every book, okay, every story, Joseph Campbell talks about this in The Hero's Journey, and he's heard it a million times. Every story has an inciting incident.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that incident didn't happen, the story wouldn't have happened. It would never have occurred. So that's where the voice is. How do they tell that story? How do they bring that up? How would you tell that story to your friend? And this is a really good tip. Get your best friend, turn on iTalk, and tell them something. Tell them something. And you will get your own voice that way. Because I think very often talking helps, you know, recording a conversation of yourself, or even if you're in a room, and you want to verify something, or even just today, I have a project I've been working on that I'm a little stuck on. I said this morning, I'm going to read this aloud today, because, you know, you hear it differently. So try different things to mix it up as well, and also try with your voice. I think your process is always a little bit in line with your voice. So, you know, try and get a little bit more familiar what your process is, you know, in writing. How do you like to write? You like to write in the morning or the evening? Because that's about getting to know yourself as a writer too. Those would be some things I would look at when you're starting to explore voice, because it's everything.
It is. And
if you have the right voice, it's like someone's holding your hand. You'll hold that hand and you'll go through the whole book with them. If it's the right voice, if you hear that voice, if it's that thing. Right now, real people are really great to look at. Right now, I'm reading this awesome book by Jane Goodall. It's called A Reason for Hope.
Yeah.
And she's got that, you know, with her first bit, her first little sentence, she just brings you in. You know, she is, of course, Jane Goodall. She had a ghostwriter help her write the story, of course. It's just amazing, you know, if you look at that. It's just an amazing thing to go ahead and explore voice in that way. Find your own and then just get a bunch of great examples.
So be a student of yourself, be a student of other people.
Mm-hmm.
Be a student of life, I guess. And this brings us very neatly back to Julia Cameron and The Artist's Way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know where I'd be without her.
This is funny because this is, I'm doing my interviews a little bit out of order from when they air, but this is the second interview in a row where Artist's Way has come up, and it is just, and I don't want this to be like the Artist's Way podcast, but I believe it to be so seminal to creative people. And I believe at heart, we are all creative people. And it's just like, it's just such a delightful little journey I took for the first time when I was in college, that everybody owes themselves, because if we don't make time for these things, like you were saying, everybody's busy. Life always finds a way to interfere. If we don't make time for ourselves to know ourselves better, to be like, what is my process? What does that even mean for me as a writer, as a creative person? I feel like we're not going to get very far.
Well, that's really well said. And I think also part of that is living with intention. What is your intention with what your work? What do you want to represent? Who do you want to be? What do you want to say? What is your message? And I think that's partly it, you know, is also having that down, you know, and you said it perfectly.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So on that wonderful note, you work with writers, right? Is there anything you want to tell our listeners before we sort of wrap things up?
Oh yeah, sure. You know, if you're stuck, I do consultation with writers, you know, just to get unstuck on, you know, just maybe get some perspective, like I said, you know, about seeing some things that maybe they could be doing a little bit differently in their work. And then also, you know, ghostwriting books. I also do that as well, obviously. And you could just, you know, whatever you want to take a look at, I'm at laurasmagicday.com. And, you know, if anybody wants to book a discovery call, they can. It's just like 15 minutes of hanging out and drinking coffee like I do all the time. And that's it. Yeah. So I would enjoy helping anyone get to the next level.
And thank you for hanging out with me, hanging out with us. This, again, is Laura Elliott, a friendly ghost. My name is Mary Cole. This has been the Good Story Podcast. And Laura, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mary. Pleasure to be here with you and your listeners.
The pleasure is all mine. And everybody out there, have a wonderful day. And here is to a good story. Thank you so much for joining us for the Good Story Podcast. My name is Mary Cole. The Good Story Podcast is made possible by my team, Abby Pickus, Amy Holland, Amy Wilson, Jen Petro-Roy, Jana Van Roy, Kristen Overman, Paige Polzine, and audio and video wizardry from Steve Reese. You can find us online at goodstorycompany.com, goodstorypodcast.com. I'm at Mary Cole, that's Cole with a K, .com. And also find your writing partner at critcollective.com. And here is to a good story.